Harper Audio presents Kicking and Dreaming, a story of heart, soul, and rock and roll by Anne and Nancy Wilson with Charles R. Cross. Narrated by Anne, Nancy, and Lynn Wilson with David W. Collins and Rick Zeef.
Dedication to Hannah, whose pioneering spirit lives on. Prologue. L'Homme Magique, Calgary, Alberta, Canada, October 18th, 1975. Our journey starts with Anne's encounter with the Devil's Nightclub and poison food. Nancy, meanwhile, battles the demons of disco, orange jumpsuits, and flames, both good and evil.
Anne Wilson.
I never thought much about it at the time, but looking back, it seems odd that our career came crashing apart and then came magically back together in a club called Lucifer's. Robert Johnson, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Jimmy Page. You might have expected all of them on the bill at Lucifer's in Calgary, Canada. But in October 1975, the red-flamed letters on the club's marquee read, "From Vancouver, Dreamboat Annie recording artists, Heart." Never mind that my sister Nancy and I were from the Seattle suburbs, temporarily transplanted to Canada. The red letters in the sign, with a couple of burned-out bulbs, could have represented what was happening to Hart's career. We'd been red-hot for a time, but our flame was suddenly flickering. Dreamboat Annie had come out 2 months before, and Crazy on You earned decent airplay in Vancouver. But the album had been released only in Canada and with very limited distribution. Our label had a staff of two, and operated out of a desk in a corner of Mushroom Studios. We'd come to Vancouver 3 years before with a plan for stardom. The plan had worked. Slowly, steadily, we'd move forward. As we joked among ourselves, we had become the number one cabaret band in Vancouver. That meant we played nightclubs 6 nights a week, 5 sets a night. Those gigs had paid off artistically, if not financially. If one believes the theory Malcolm Gladwell puts forth in his book Outliers, that if you spend 10,000 hours doing something, you get good at it, Hart had become very good indeed. But we were also broke. Every Canadian dollar we earned went into instruments, amplifiers, speakers, or our van, which often collided with wildlife. At that moment, our van needed costly repairs from a moose accident before it could make it back home from Calgary. Our manager and my boyfriend, Michael Fisher, a.k.a. The Magic Man, was constantly pushing his 5-year plan, which was to build Hart from a nightclub act to an album band, to stardom in Canada, and finally to U.S. success. Everything had worked accordingly until our album came out and failed to take off immediately, and our career went into a stall phase. Since we couldn't play Vancouver clubs every week without wearing out our welcome, we had to take any gig we could find. We played taverns, roadhouses, keggers, private parties. We played dozens of high school dances. We once played a prom in North Vancouver where Michael J. Fox was the student body president. He came back before the show to shake our hands. "That kid is going places," Nancy said of the short, good-looking boy with a strong handshake, and she was right. We took the gig at Lucifer's in Calgary, a 14-hour drive from Vancouver, because it was the only offer we had right then. We were booked for a 2-week run, 5 sets a night, 6 nights a week. That first night, we drew a packed house on a typically slow Monday. But after the show, the club manager lectured us that we had brought in the wrong crowd. Our fans hadn't eaten enough food and they drank beer rather than pricier hard liquor. He also said we played too loud. As the week went by, it was more of the same. We played to big houses, yet the manager thought we should play more covers. Disco was big at the time, and he suggested we'd be more successful if we dropped our original songs entirely and played only disco hits. Playing in this club felt as if we could have been working at an insurance company with a demanding boss. This was not rock and roll. On Saturday night, our 6th in a row at Lucifer's with another week to go, the club treated us to dinner before the show. We were thankful for it because we often ate brown rice cooked on a camp stove in our hotel room. But the food the club served had a suspicious odor. Actually, it tasted like Pine Sol disinfectant. They had either washed the serving plates in Pine Sol or the cleaner had somehow gotten into the food. It was disgusting. I began to wonder if Lucifer's was trying to poison us because we weren't a disco band.